Guyanese ambassador in England calls for an emergency repatriation of black people, saying that he fears the very survival of black minority people such as Asians and Indians in England to the increasing intense racial hatred and violence that have broken out in every industrial city where blacks are allowed to live. In most rural settings, blacks and Indians do not live any longer, as in the case of the United States. Most blacks are concentrated in ghettos and can easily be destroyed by neutron bombs, for instance. A neutron bomb makes a very good anti-personnel, anti-civilian weapon against their own ghettos. If you wipe out a ghetto of black people, leaving all property to the landlords untouched. This is actually the opinion of the head of the Urban Affairs League in USA. The neutron bomb is not only an enemy of the people abroad who are fighting colonialism, it has been created to destroy American blacks and Indians on reservations when the time comes, because it is massive enough to do damage to the Soviets, who have much more superior weaponry. So he sees it as a method to exterminate concentration camps, reserves, reservations in South Africa, Indian reservations, and black ghettos. Indeed, the chairman of Urban Affairs may quite be right in his analysis. Complaints about the Guyanese National Cooperative Bank are being lodged by members of the PNC. The youth of the PNC seem to be struggling for a much stronger socialist course in the Socialist Youth Organization and the Women's Revolutionary Socialist Movement. They're claiming that there are still misuse and misappropriations, lack of the proper amount of socialization that should be conducted. The New Nation, official organ of the PNC, the ruling party, states that they are suspicious of Carter's move in Chile and Venezuela. They said he did not miss, of course, his opportunity to pronounce his favorite hypocritical theme of human rights, this time praising Perez for his commitment to the guarantee of such rights. And many viewers observe as more than coincidental the announcement of huge aid funds Venezuela is making available for international projects. In Brazil, the United States president had a very cool reception due to the fact that he told the Brazilian people that they were not going to be able to develop nuclear reactors, and they resisted him, his overture in this regard, by not attending his reception. During the Kissinger era, Brazil was urged to take on the task of being the arm of the United States imperialist watchdog against the spread of socialism in Latin America. Against this, she was officially upgraded to superpower status by the United States administration. At that time, promised sophisticated military aid was given, and a regular time-based table was announced for the exchange of visits by top U.S. and Brazilian leaders. In the meantime, the harsh reality is that Brazil has suffered tremendous economic reversal and has openly clashed with the new Carter administration on the human rights issues and questioning their national sovereignty and the supply of advanced nuclear technology from West Germany. It is widely believed the role not only Latin America but also Caribbean watchdog has been passed on to Chile. We all know the seal with which the latter fascist regime placed in power by U.S. imperialism has been carrying out this task. Particularly suspiciously warm liaisons attempted with Grenada. But it's still unclear what significance what significant outcome was followed on Mr. Carter's talk of visits in Brazil. It's not known if, as had happened after the Kissinger visit, there will be a sudden emergence of hostility between Brazil and socialist countries. This is doubtful, however, since not only has the alleged threat of Guyana, socialism, and other socialist nations in the Caribbean been discredited in terms of exporting revolution, but also Brazil's observer status is the third world, conjoined with the economic difficulties she faces, has made her much more appreciative of third world causes. Brazil is moving more to liberal positions daily. We'll have to wait and see if there will be any massive infusion of aid to boost the gigantic sugar and burgeoning bauxite concerns in Brazil as a result of Carter's visit. Such a development may not augur well the stability of our own enterprises. But we feel that Brazil, said the organ of the PNC, New Nation, has learned its lesson not to trust the imperial designs of the USA. Shortly before the end of President Ford's term of office, Nigerian government tersely advised Dr. Kissinger that his personal security could not be guaranteed were he to visit their country, as he eagerly wanted to. The former Secretary of State canceled his then much publicized visit to the powerful African country, and returned home. His African shuttle abroad aborted. Yet today, Mr. Carter can really actually touch down in Lagos. Why? The new American administration has been stepping up the courtship of Nigeria for several reasons. Firstly, the Americans wish to undercut the growing Soviet bloc and Cuban influence on the African continent for liberation. Secondly, Nigeria is the second largest supplier of oil to the United States after Saudi Arabia. And thirdly, and very importantly, the recognition is drawing and dawning that a pivotal role can be and perhaps will be played by the powerful and wealthy Nigerian military in influencing the outcome of the conflict in southern Africa. Were this to happen, the United States wishes to be sure that its position has been sold to the Nigerians, even though we in the PNC feel it is not a sincere position. This is rather an ambitious ploy by the United States, for certainly the history of African politics, with the noted exception of the reactionary Zarian regime, does not give this kind of initiative, say, more than a fleeting chance of success. Lastly, Mr. Carter has visited Liberia, but so has Mr. Worcester, fascist from South Africa, and this latter fact testifies to the softness of William Talbert's right-wing regime and how his policies are the embodiment of what capitalist societies desire. We say no more on this, but quote an authoritative study on Liberia's dilemma. Since 1912, foreign advisors played an important role in decision-making in Liberia, and complicated, unfair loans, unfair loans tied the country to external creditors. In 1926, the government signed an agreement with Firestone Rubber Company, permitting the latter to grow rubber in return for protection from foreign governments and a loan for $5 million used to pay off their debts. Service charges on the loan from Firestone and advisors' salaries amounted to a fixed charge of nearly $270,000 a year, constituting 20% of government's revenues in 1928 and about 50% in 1931. Firestone later increased its control to include ownership of the major bank, the radio communication system, and the airlines, and prospecting rights to look for minerals on the millions of acres of land granted them from the impoverished Liberians who are still at sub-starvation levels. But the Carter visit must be praised for the overall concern it seemingly places in attempting to understand the problems of the underdeveloped, whatever his motivation. But to the extent that the dust has not yet fully settled after his visits to Venezuela, Brazil, and Nigeria, not much more can be said. It is apparent that the youth that predominate the party of the PNC do not trust Carter. The undertone of all their articles is a wait-and-see policy. The same tone that comes from Cuba, that Carter's been forced to the fact that the Cuban and Soviet assistance is so promising, has gained them such heroic adulation, that is the Soviet and Cuban people, that U.S. posture has forced to be changed. What remains to be seen is whether Carter can convince rationally the U.S. government and John Q. public that they're going to have to make changes in this world before it blows up. This afternoon's radio reports that the issue of Suriname and Guyana. Suriname's a nation to the east. You should look at our new world map prepared by Engineer Christian, the Bond, so you can read your news and study it well. Has been settled for the time being that U.S. imperialism, according to Guyana Broadcasting, has not been able to wedge differences between two great black nations. That is an encouraging effect, because earlier it did not look very promising. The mounting popularity and influence of socialism throughout the world is provoking imperialist propaganda machinery to intensely attack against the system. The latest effort worth noting appeared in the Time magazine of U.S., noted for its reactionary stands, says the Guyana Chronicle, Sunday, April 2. It is worth noting because it unwittingly exposes the confusion and concern of imperialism in the face of the world socialist revolutionary process that is destined to liberate all of the oppressed of the world. It is also a perfect example of journalistic sensationalism. The article appeared under the headline, A Special Report, Socialism, Its Trials and Errors. On the cover page of Time magazine, the word socialism is drawn out, said the Guyana Chronicle, organ of our own PNC government, People's National Congress. It was drawn out in a very spectacular way, in big block letters, some of these standing upright, others falling, and most of them with huge cracks and jagged edges. All around this drawing of the word socialism in the Time magazine, which is made to look like a crumbling edifice or building, are tiny figures of workers, some in machines, others on ladders, still others armed with all sorts of tools, with all apparently carrying out a task of repairing this crumbling building. The impression one is supposed to get from looking at the cover page of Time magazine, reactionary U.S. magazine, is that the structure of socialism is crumbling, breaking up despite repairs being feverishly carried out. It looks impressive, but the special report to support this image, however, falls short of its mark. The author of the special report, for example, describes the Marxist doctrine of class struggle and its outcome as having, over the past 100 years, been transformed into a new, often hollow orthodoxy, bitterly distrusted among disillusioned socialists themselves and by new, ideologically homeless radicals. The fact of the matter is that Karl Marx's scientific theory, revealing the process of history, is an instrument of objective forecasting which predicts the fall of capitalist society and asserts the inevitability of the system of socialism. In the light of the predictions by this doctrine, its unqualified rejection by imperialism is not difficult to understand, particularly in view of the fact that Marxism now has two-thirds of the world's population under its umbrella of protection. But this mere wishing away of objective laws of social development by U.S. imperialism to its propaganda machinery of Time magazine is extremely naive, said the Guyana Chronicle, to say the least. Several of the well-worn arguments, for example, on deprivation of individual liberties and freedom, bureaucratic inefficiency, corruption, and elitism in socialist countries, are faithfully reproduced in the special report. Needless to say, these charges have been refuted from time to time by all revolutionaries throughout the world. Some of the situation is mentioned to highlight the ineffectiveness of socialism in other countries are, in fact, it should be noted, characteristic of societies in the period of transition from capitalism to socialism. Sweeping generalities and specific allegations aside, the special report turns out to be a somewhat lying, grudging, reluctant acceptance of growing advances and victories of the socialist system. Commenting of the quality of state-provided social services under socialism, the writer admits that the essential human services provided by Marxist-Leninist states often match and oftentimes top those in Western democracies, so-called. The writer admits that economically socialism has logged impressive achievements, sometimes against tremendous odds. Indeed, on careful analysis of the special report, one senses an underlying attitude of pessimistic fatalism towards the topic. It is obvious that the special report, in a sort of panic reaction to the continuing rapid growth and development of the socialist system, is nothing more than blatant imperialist propaganda. It is widely known that the system of capitalism is even now experiencing serious economic difficulties. The growing impact of socialism, acknowledged by the special report, even in the Times itself, is one of the main factors accelerating the disintegration of the capitalist system, primarily kept alive today by U.S. monopoly forces. Briefly, the general crisis of capitalism, said the Guyana Chronicle, up to this last Sunday, began in 1917 with the victory of the great October Revolution in the Soviet Union, USSR. At the end of the Second World War, the crisis became much more serious when a number of countries in Asia and Europe broke away from the capitalist orbit and embraced the freeing, emancipating force of socialism. At the same time, said the Guyana Chronicle this last Sunday, the vigorous and undaunted struggles of the national liberation revolutionary movements against the capitalist system made possible the formation of several independent states. By the late 1950s, the system of colonialism had almost completely collapsed by the forces and coalition of socialism. Of course, our own efforts in obtaining independence here in Guyana and the construction of a socialist society under the banner of the vanguard of Marxist-Leninism, the People's National Congress, hardly need stressing. The recent victories of the liberation movements in Asia and Africa also are further manifestations of the growing disintegration of the capitalist system. Even at home, the capitalist countries find themselves more and more being confronted by crippling strikes, unemployment, bringing about near starvation levels, even in the U.S., and industrial unrest as the workers struggle harder to assert their rights and extricate the exploitation of man by man. The capitalist states are being forced to start making gradual concessions in order to preserve the base of the capitalist order. The special report itself acknowledges recognition of necessity and stirrings of conscience will continue to spur the capitalists to embrace some of these demands for social justice through the only means necessary, socialism. Instead of placing a drawing of a crumbling building, edifice of socialism on the cover of the Time Magazine, U.S., the editor should have placed the world capitalism and imperialism, of course, in a similar state of disrepair, decay, and disarray, with a few bourgeoisie ideologists feverishly painting and carrying out urgent repairs to the structure, which will be inadequate because the forces of socialism spearheaded by the great October Revolution in the USSR, according to the Guyana Chronicle, Sunday, April 2nd, will be destined to victory. A little insight into the youth sentiment of the PNC. News of the World is still at the same pace. A standoff at the Horn of Africa as Ethiopia holds its own, well due to Cuban and Soviet aid. You heard the noon news about Andrew Young and should ask about it. A typical example of schizophrenia. Blacks, tragically, no political assassinations well in the life of the black civil rights leaders. The whine of the bullet from ambush, said Guyana Chronicle yesterday. The roar of the bomb have all too often broken the night silence. They have been replaced now by lynching as a political weapon, again dignified by leaders, senators, and Supreme Court justices in the United States, said the Guyana Chronicle. More than a decade ago, sudden death came to Mr. and Mrs. Harry T. Moore, NAACP leaders in Florida. The Reverend George Lee of Benzoni, Mississippi, was shot to death on the steps of a rural courthouse. The bombings multiplied. 1963 was a year of assassinations. Medgar Evers in Jackson, William Moore of Alabama, six blessed Negro children in Birmingham, and who could doubt that these two were all part of the political assassination process of the United States. 10 years ago, on April 4, 1968, a real fighter was brought down by a sniper's bullet instrumented by the FBI while standing on a motel balcony in Memphis, Tennessee. Not everyone, said the Guyana Chronicle, thought he was fighting the right way, but there must have been a few of us in Guyana who did not feel anger enough at the senseless, brutal act which brought his life to an end. Even though we did not agree that peace, pacifism, and nonviolence could bring it about, Martin Luther King, Jr., the civil rights leader, a believer in nonviolence, was assassinated that day for the struggle. Before his death, he spoke out about assassinations. Just before his death. And I gave you some of them just a moment ago, jumping around in the article. The unforgivable default of our society has been its failure to approach, to apprehend the assassins. Now, demand the apprehension of the assassins, said this article being picked up from the Communist Daily Worker. It is a harsh judgment, but undeniably true, that the cause of the indifference was the identity of the victims. Nearly all were blacks, and blacks do not count even today in U.S. life. And so the plague spread until all claimed the most eminent American, until it claimed the most eminent American, a warmly loved and respected president even. The words of Jesus, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me, were more than a figurative expression. They were a literal prophecy. We were all involved in the death of John Kennedy, said the U.S. article, reprinted in the Guyana Chronicle. We tolerated hate. We tolerated the sick simulation of violence in all walks of life. We tolerated the differential application of law, which said that a man's life was sacred only if we agreed with his views. We agreed that property was more important than human rights. This may explain the cascading grief that flooded the country in late November. We mourned a man who had become the pride of the nation, but we grieved as well for ourselves because we knew we were sick. And it's not getting any better. We need to remember, said this article, reprinted in the Guyana Chronicle, Martin Luther King, born January 15, 1929, assassinated April 4, 1968. Memory lapses, but mourners lament. Because the conditions of racial injustice and oppression are even greater, said the Guyana Chronicle, today in America than they were at the time of the passing of the beloved Dr. Martin Luther King. You will listen now to the movie. Steering committee will gather. You have the movie, which needs to be watched and observed to learn that, as the Ghana Chronicle said, peace and pacifism does not succeed in defending people against revolutionary exploitation. We counter revolutionary exploitation. It takes revolutionary violence of the people, prepared to be demonstrated on the moment notice, that you will fight for your freedom and maintain your solidarity. So watch that movie, read in the library, increase your socialist knowledge. We've embarked upon the experiment of total liberation. We're internationalists. We have great, great benefits, oh, so many built-in benefits. And we have the opportunity to fight for what we die. If worse came to worse, have all the protections, paranormal of father, great protections of socialism, thousand strong guaranteeing you medicine, nurses around the clock right now with Isaac Edwards, who's doing well, should have been dead, his role should have been dead this week, thousand strong to defend that no one will come in and take you away, our own security forces guarding this 30 miles of our territory very well. Thousand strong, guaranteeing you eating tomorrow and for many, many tomorrows. For no man shall take our life. We will lay it down only when we get prepared for the cause of revolution, or to bring a message redounding for justice on the behalf of oppressed peoples. We are fortunate people to have something to live for, to be able to protect our children, even to be able to protect them from revolutionary suicide if the worst came to worst. We are indeed a noble people because we have cause that lifts us above the animal plane, and a leader who loved us so much, he suffers daily, nightly, going through the intrinsic planning that I mentioned to you earlier, how people goof up and I have to plan on the radio, ever move to see that you're taken care of, to guarantee in the transition of this country from capitalism to socialism, necessary to bring doctors from Cuba to get the very best follow-up on our young patient, my child. What a wonderful spirit that you see, that your leader will spare nothing and has time to attend to the individual need as well as the tremendous collective planning, the costly, costly planning to maintain us. Today it was difficult getting oil because of the boycott. It was very difficult because of the power failure. But we got oil to get us through. The intricate planning that goes in to get us food in a time of world crisis when U.S. is spinning in confusion as its economic order is about to falter and even to collapse as the dollar plummets every day worse and worse on the world market. No dollar in the world can possibly be compared to the failing U.S. dollar. It fails compared to the Deutsche Mark, Germany, Swiss Mark, Swiss franc, rather, the French franc, English pound, particularly the Japanese yen. The economy's in one hell of a state. And Carter, caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, man without any real conscience, trying to please everyone and not pleasing anyone, thus being thrown under investigative inquiry by the FBI himself. It's a troubled time. We hold on. We can go through all of the difficulties or even white nights if necessary to the day when systems falter. We'll be able then to thrust liberation out to extend benefits to all people and expand this beautiful program to take in all those that are hungry for equality that some of you take for granted, hungry for protection that some of you don't even appreciate, hungry for the assurances that Father will never let anyone come in and take them away. Oh, the world would die. Many of them would die to see their children have this opportunity. We, to the very moment of dust, should be cleaning, painting, repairing, check with coordinators, new incentives and new ways to build housing, cut down lights wherever possible, because we've got to watch in this economic boycott. It can be an economic boycott. We do not waste any generator parts. our electrical bulbs, and our water must also be cut down because that requires power to pump the water up so we have an abundance of it. Thank you and all my love. Shorter news than usual because all day has been spent in strategies with the Georgetown radio. Much love. Begin the movie. The movie, again, it has a message. You should study it over and again till you are prepared to do anything for socialism. Anything, my brother, my sister, anything, my children, anything but fail. Steering committee also begins at this hour. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have steering committee, all steering committee members. Let's assemble in the rice tent, in the rear of the rice tent, right now.